Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm Dean Welty, along with Rita Dunaway, and our question today is a simple one. What do you do when our government asks you to do something that violates your deeply held, biblically based beliefs? The fact is that today our culture has often become so hostile to the Christian worldview that we may well find ourselves in situations where what we believe comes into direct conflict, not only with our culture, but with the laws, regulations, and mandates of our own government. So today we're going to talk about civil disobedience. Civil disobedience. But what does that mean?
It's an important question to ask, Dean. If we're going to talk about it, we all need to make sure we understand exactly what we mean by that.
Well, Rita, I think the meaning is pretty simple, but it's a bit intimidated to face the prospect of civil disobedience. And that's because when we say civil disobedience, we're talking about acting contrary to some prohibition or some requirement of a powerful civil government. We're talking about standing up on our hind legs and saying no when our government demands that we bow down to it and say yes. Mm-hmm. It's not easy to do. So, Rita, help us out. Why is it so important that we talk about this?
Well, I think you laid that groundwork very well. It's important to talk about it because our culture is becoming increasingly hostile toward the Christian worldview in particular, and I would say toward absolute truth and morality in general. So whether you're a Christian or a non-Christian, there may be times when what our government requires of us or purports to require of us goes against natural law, moral law, absolute truth, however you want to refer to it. But I think, Dean, that for this whole conversation, in order to really address the topic well, we have to go back in time. And I mean way back in time. Because the starting point really for this whole discussion is creation. And I know we talked at length about creation a while back in a series of programs we did. It's so important. The book of Genesis is so important, and we should not neglect it. As Christians, we believe that God created us as humans. He created the universe, and he created the laws that govern everything, not just scientific laws like gravity, but also the moral law that is innate in every human being.
Rita, that's a new concept for many of us. We understand the hard truth about things like gravity. You can't argue with it. Mm-hmm. If you try, you're likely to have a hard landing. But moral law, we often think of that as more a matter of opinion. The Ten Commandments, for example, have become more like the Ten Suggestions. It's okay for you to feel strongly about some of these things, but don't try to impose your morality on me. And that seems to be, Rita, where we are today, a world in which we are free to do whatever we like, whenever we like, without moral boundaries. We hear it all the time. If it feels good, do it. And I am reminded of what we read in the book of Judges. There was no king in Israel, and everyone did what was right in his own eyes. So, Rita, what's wrong with that?
Well, I just have to go back, first of all, to something we said in an earlier program that we did on this whole question of absolute truth. And I think I referred to C.S. Lewis's writings on this topic, which are just absolutely fantastic. And, you know, he pointed out that a lot of people may say they don't believe in absolute truth or absolute morality, but in fact, really everyone does. I mean, you look down through history, and one of Lewis's example was there's never been a culture where people were happy with human beings who act like cowards or human beings who take advantage of the weak and underprivileged. So people may say they don't believe in an absolute moral law or absolute truth, but in reality, they do. And you can get to that point where most people will ultimately admit that. But Dean, the reason we have to start back with these fundamental concepts, creation, a creator, absolute moral law, is that in order to talk about civil disobedience, we have to establish a hierarchy of just, legitimate authority. So we see, when we start back in Genesis, that at the top of that hierarchy is God, the creator. But God has also ordained other forms of just, legitimate authority, including civil government.
Well, Rita, you just used a word that a lot of us don't like.
Oh.
Authority. We like to think of ourselves as above all that. We're above the law. We're above the authority of other people. I can think of some people who seem to think that about themselves. And I will start with myself at times. No one can tell us what to do and what not to do. But Rita, doesn't it go beyond just the civil law? Isn't it true that civil government is just one of the forms of just authority ordained by God?
Yes.
It isn't the only authority, is it? And for example, didn't God design the church to perform certain functions? Didn't he design the family with parents? I hope the children are listening here. With parents having authority over their children.
Amen.
As a mama, we say amen. So to put it into context, wasn't civil government actually designed for a very limited and more specific set of purposes?
Absolutely. That's right. And what I think is so interesting, Dean, is that originally, at the very beginning of creation, the only type of government ordained by God was self-government, right? In the Garden of Eden, the man and the woman, Adam and Eve, were given specific instructions directly by God. It was up to them to be self-governing under God. And when they sinned, their punishment was executed by God directly, sending them out of the garden. But as a result of the fall and the existence of sin in the world, God ordained civil governments to administer justice and to provide protection. And we probably get the best sense of that from Romans 13, if you're wondering where I came up with that.
Well, Rita, I really like that. Romans 13 gives us a very clear view of what government is all about.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps we can understand it better if we see the role of government, as Romans 13 does, as primarily a negative role. Its major responsibility is to punish evildoers and to protect citizens from those evildoers. So, while we might delegate some other authority and powers to civil government, its highest priority, its God-given role, is to administer justice by punishing and protecting us from those evildoers. In fact, Romans 13 makes it very clear. God has ordained government as his ministers to wield the sword and execute wrath on those who do evil. It's a vivid picture of the power and the proper role of government. It is no paper tiger.
That's exactly right. And, you know, according to our founders in the Declaration of Independence, the purpose of government is to secure the people's rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So, you know, as long as civil government sticks to its job in punishing evildoers and protecting citizens from them and securing the natural rights of citizens, there's really no place for civil disobedience,
right? We'd be happy with a government like that.
Yeah, that'd be great. It's only when government goes beyond the scope of its legitimate authority that civil disobedience then comes into play. And we know from history that at times, government will impose injustice rather than administering justice. Of course, this is another result of the fall and sin in our world.
History?
Talking about history.
Okay. Well, it seems to have some application for today as well.
History, yes, both ancient and modern.
Yes.
At these times, whenever our government imposes injustice or seeks to require something of us that it has no legitimate authority to require, then it becomes our duty as Christians to obey God rather than man.
Well, in fact, Rita, Jesus summed this up very nicely when he said, "Render to Caesar what is Caesar's, render to God what is God's." Mm-hmm. If we're talking about a separation of church and state, that is the best definition of it, I think. And here's an example. When faced with orders to stop preaching, Peter and John said the same thing. Should we obey man or mm-hmm. should we obey God? Should we seek the approval of man or should we seek the approval of God?
Yeah, that's right. Well, let's move on a bit, Dean. I think we have probably laid a pretty good foundation for this. Let's look at some examples of civil disobedience in action. And I'm going to go way back in history again for this. My favorite example of all from the Bible comes from Exodus 1:17. The king of Egypt had grown concerned that the Israelites might grow stronger than the Egyptians. It said this king of Egypt did not remember Joseph, just to set the context for where we are in time. And the king was concerned that the Israelites might grow stronger than the Egyptians and outnumber them. So the solution the king came up with was to order the Hebrew midwives to kill all male infants as they were in the birthing process. In Exodus 1:17, it says, "But the midwives feared God and did not do as the king of Egypt had commanded them, but let the boys live." So, Dean, do we have an order given by the government?
We do.
Did the order require people to break God's law?
Absolutely.
So civil disobedience was demanded of them.
Amen.
And what I love about this passage, Dean, is that it is very clear that God was pleased with the midwives' civil disobedience. He approved of it. In verse 20, in fact, it says, "So God was good to the midwives, and the people multiplied and became very mighty. Because the midwives feared God, he established households for them." So God rewarded them for obeying his law, even if it meant they had to directly violate an order of the king.
Rita, I'm going on a little side trail here, but you brought it up.
Oh,
they
dear.
They feared God. Do you remember what Jethro told Moses about selecting good leaders? Able men who fear God.
Yes.
That is the basis for what we obey and what we do not obey.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I like the example of the wise men, another example of civil disobedience. You may remember that they were ordered by King Herod to report back to him when they found baby Jesus.
That sounds like an order.
That's
by
an
the
order,
government.
By the king. The wise men suspected that the king meant harm to baby Jesus. They refused the order, and they took another way home without going back to him. But probably the one that most of us know best mm-hmm. is the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
Yeah.
I love this.
Yeah.
They were ordered to bow down before a golden image. They refused, and they paid the price, even though they knew what the price was. They were thrown into a fiery furnace for what should have been a certain death. Daniel is another one. He refused to obey a law that he stopped praying to God. For his disobedience, he was thrown into a den of lions, again for what was intended to be a certain death. Now that makes our civil disobedience look a little timid.
It really does. And, you know, I think it's important. We are so familiar today with those stories that we kind of gloss over them. Oh, you know, wasn't that great? Do we really stop and think about what it would have been like for them? Do we think about the agony they must have faced? Maybe they didn't, but I would think that they faced agony over this decision. Well, you know, if I bow down, then I can go on, you know, doing good in the world. And it's just a little bow, or it's just a little, you know, I'll hide when I do this thing, and then it'll all be done and I can live. What agony it must have been to them to make that decision, because they didn't know how it was going to end for them.
And, you know, a human response, and I think I would have been tempted. Well, God, I'll bow down, but in my heart, I'm
yes,
standing up.
Exactly.
Or Daniel, well, God, I'll pray, but if you don't mind, I'll do it in my closet
exactly.
so nobody will know.
I could get really good at coming up with those little caveats for God. Yeah. Well, let's move up to modern day history. Okay. Are you ready?
All right, let's do
Let's talk about Nazi Germany, which was not that long ago. When Hitler was in the process of sending the Jews off to concentration camps, there were laws against non-Jews harboring the Jews or helping them to escape from the country to get to safety. Is there any doubt in our minds sitting here today that God was pleased every time some courageous German put his own life and family at risk in order to disobey those outrageous civil laws and to rescue Jews from genocide?
Well, Rita, I think of a modern-day example in America, Martin Luther King Jr., a great example of a man who refused to follow the segregation laws in the 1960s. He was thrown into prison for his disobedience. In fact, it was in 1963 that he wrote his famous letter from a Birmingham jail calling on the church to take a stand for civil rights. Well, in fact, he was falling into step with his namesake, Martin Luther, who in 1517, nailed his 95 theses to the wall of a church in Wittenberg, Germany, taking a stand against a church that had become abusive of its power. Mm-hmm. And that act helped launch the Great Reformation of the Catholic Church.
It's important that we be able to look back now and see how much good came from the courageous acts of a few people throughout the course of history who took a stand.
And you mentioned courage. Minnery said in his book, courage is contagious.
Yes.
When you see one person taking a stand, it inspires others to follow that example.
And that reminds me of something that one of my teachers long ago, I think it was my speech professor in college, said to me that has always stuck. She said, if you act brave, you will be brave. And the point was, sometimes you forget about your feelings and whether you feel the courage or whether you feel brave. And sometimes you just do the thing that you know is the right thing for you to do. But let's get a little bit closer to home and start to make this relevant for today's world. Why does any of this matter to us today, Dean? And why are we even doing this program?
Well, we've talked a number of times, Rita, about the threats to our religious freedom and the increasing hostility to those who act on their beliefs. We mentioned Jesus' words a minute ago when he called on us to render to Caesar what is Caesar's, render to God what is God's. Well, let's do bring it home. In 2009, a group of nationally known leaders took Jesus' words to heart, and they created a document known as the Manhattan Declaration because they saw the storm clouds forming in America. They saw the need for people to take a stand against an increasingly abusive culture and an intrusive, even immoral, overpowering civil government in America. Rita, if I may, I'd like to read just a couple of excerpts from that declaration.
Absolutely.
Here's what they said in the end. It is because we honor justice and the common good that we will not comply with any edict that purports to compel us or our institutions to participate in abortions and any other anti-life act. Nor will we bend to any rule purporting to force us to bless immoral sexual partnerships, to treat them as marriages or its equivalent, and to refrain from proclaiming the truth about morality, immorality, marriage, and the family. And here's how they end it. We will fully and ungrudgingly render to Caesar what is Caesar's, but under no circumstances will we render to Caesar what is God's. And following up on that, more than 500,000 people have signed that document as a commitment to stand against what we know to be wrong. Well, that's where we are today.
Yeah.
But just bringing it home again, we have this growing list of people who have stood up to government. Many of us know the story of Kim Davis, a clerk of the court in Rowan County, Kentucky, who refused to sign same-sex, quote, marriage, unquote, certificates after the Supreme Court had issued its infamous decision to legalize such marriages. Well, in that case, even though she had made arrangements to issue the certificates without her personal signature, that wasn't good enough. Mm. The LGBT bullies and the ACLU wanted her scalp, yes. And she too was thrown into prison for her, quote, civil disobedience, unquote. Now, many of our listeners, Rita, will recall that Kim Davis came to Harrisonburg last May yes. to attend our spring dinner, and we were honored to present her with our annual Daniel Award from the Valley Family Forum. But, Rita, the good news that has just come in. There's a great ending to this story, because a district court judge has just ordered that every charge leveled against her be dismissed. She is free from the clutches of the law.
Yes, that is wonderful news, and I'm so pleased for her. That ended well. It doesn't always
it
end
doesn't.
Well.
Nope.
It doesn't, and we could give lots of examples of that too, but I'm proud of Kim Davis and the stand that she took. And, you know, it's so relevant because with the rise of these so-called non-discrimination statutes that make gender identity or sexual orientation a protected classification on the same level as race or ethnicity or age, many business owners will likely be called upon to choose between violating those laws or assisting in the celebration of something that the Bible says is wrong. And there are already many examples that we could talk about right now of bakers, florists, and photographers who have been placed in this very situation. And, you know, I just want to point out, I don't want anyone to get the idea that we are somehow picking on the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender community. It's not that we're picking on them or that we're concerned about that issue more than others. It's that this is an area in which I see persecution against Christians starting to break out. And I am very, very concerned about it.
Well, we need to be concerned about it because it's growing. And we need to take a stand. But Rita, let's give our audience a little quiz. Let's walk through two hypotheticals on civil disobedience just to make it a little bit more practical for us. Let's take number
practical
one.
Practical and fun.
It can be that.
Everybody loves a pop quiz,
okay, right? Here's your pop quiz.
Okay.
Let's say that Congress has passed a law that provides for a free college education for all American high school graduates, including immigrants who were brought to the U.S. illegally, and the government has mandated that your tax dollars fund this new program. Is this a case for civil disobedience so that we should withhold our taxes from the government?
Well, Dean, I would say in that case, no. Because the government's order does not force me to violate God's law. Now, I want to point out that this is a totally different question from whether this law would be a good law or not. And, you know, I think it's an important point to make that in many cases when we disagree with what our government is doing, rather than engage in civil disobedience, the people need to work to change those bad or unjust laws.
Okay, Rita, you slipped out of that noose.
Do you agree with my assessment?
I do, but this, as you know, needs to be addressed on a case-by-case basis. And here's another hypothetical that you hadn't planned to answer. What about the Little Sisters of the Poor?
Uh-huh.
Should they be forced to buy health insurance that includes funding for contraceptives and abortifacients that go against their church teaching?
They should not, because I would say there's a more direct connection that they, as an organization, are paying for an act to be committed which is directly against God's law.
So they should indeed, and they can, engage in civil disobedience, which they've done, but they're also trying to get a reprieve from that law through the courts.
Yes. And, you know, while we're on this topic, I just want to give a shout out to the groups, the legal organizations out there, the nonprofit groups, a few of which I have been associated with in various capacities, you know, and I'm thinking of Liberty Council, I'm thinking of Alliance Defending Freedom, I'm thinking of the Rutherford Institute. There are all these groups out there that their sole mission is to provide free legal representation when they are called upon to defend religious freedom and to ensure that the people are not forced to bow to the idol of civil government.
Rita, given your passion for religious freedom, I sometimes wonder whether you might accept a job offer from one of those organizations.
I've got plenty of work to do already, but thanks, Dean. Okay, so now let's move on to hypothetical number two. Dean, pretend for a moment you are a public school science teacher in California. Don't ask me why you moved there, but you did.
And I wasn't a science teacher. I was an English teacher.
Your public school board passes a policy requiring all public school science teachers to teach their freshman classes that an unborn baby, of course they wouldn't call it that, but an unborn baby in the womb is not fully human until birth, and therefore that abortion is a socially and morally acceptable response to an unwanted pregnancy. Is this a case for civil disobedience?
Absolutely and unequivocally, yes, that is a case for civil disobedience. But just like the case with Kim Davis, you have several options. You can ask the school board to change its policy. Alternatively, if they refuse, you can do it anyway and accept the consequences, come what may. That would be civil disobedience in the form of active opposition and resistance. Or you can just decide to skip over that section of the curriculum and go on to other subjects. That would be called passive resistance.
Yes.
Finally, you can resign your position as an open protest against what you know to be wrong. There are lots of options, but we cannot obey something that violates God's law.
That's right, Dean. I agree completely with your assessment. And it sort of gives us a segue into what are going to have to be the closing comments of our program, because I was going to just end by noting that the Declaration of Independence has a provision in it for ultimate civil disobedience, which is, in fact, what our founding fathers ended up having to resort to with the American Revolution. But what I wanted to point out is something that you pointed out in your response, and that is, before resorting to civil disobedience, it is absolutely essential for the citizen involved to make appeals and to try to work it out, to look for other alternatives to civil disobedience. And I just want to read briefly from this portion of the Declaration. It says, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed." And here we go, Dean. "That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness." And then in the Declaration, it goes on to list all of the abuses of power and the many ways that they tried to appeal and to work things out without resorting to civil disobedience.
Outstanding. We got the Bible and the Declaration of Independence, and we got the Constitution. What more do we need?
Well, we need to wrap it up, Dean, because we're out of time.
All right.
If you'd like to listen to this program again or share it with your friends, go to our website at www.valleyfamilyforum.org and click on the link to Crossroads. I want to thank our sponsors, Blue Ridge Chimney Services and the dental practice of Scott A. Dunaway. Thank you all for your prayers, your encouragement, and your financial support. If you want to make a tax-deductible donation to help keep us on the air, you can do so by check to P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, Virginia 22803. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rita Dunaway with Dean Welty and our amazing engineer, Robbie Meadows, inviting you to join us again next week at the crossroads where faith and culture meet.
Let us rejoice. Let us rejoice.